It's about father-son relations or parent-child relations. In the New Testament, of course, that's the major metaphor for the situation of a human being in the world relative to God. In using that metaphor, the New Testament is appealing to something that people profoundly and universally know, what it is to love a child or what it is to love a parent. I'm interested in scripture and theology. This is an interest that I can assume I would share with a pastor, so that makes me a little bit prone to use that kind of character, perhaps. I'm very aware of how much pastors enrich people's experience, people for whom they are significant. I'm very sympathetic with the rigor and the aesthetic quality of what they do. A long time ago, when I was a little girl, I went to church with my grandfather on Easter Sunday, and I heard a sermon that I have thought about for years and years. I don't know why it was so impressive to me, although the church was beautiful, the emphasis that Easter gives. Probably that sermon and the memory of it was more important for sort of crystallizing my sense of pastors and church and all the rest of it than any other single experience. Sermons are at their best excursions into difficulty that are addressed to people who come there in order to hear that. The attention of the congregation is a major part of the attention that the pastor gives to his or her utterance. It's very exceptional. I don't know anyone who doesn't enjoy a good sermon. It's so seldom true now that you hear people speak under circumstances where they assume they're obliged to speak seriously and in good faith, and the people who hear them are assumed to be listening seriously and in good faith. This is a kind of standard of discourse that is not characteristic of the present moment. And I think that it makes a sermon, when it is a good sermon, stand out in anyone's experience. The Bible, you know, for me is Holy Writ. It's a very straightforward thing. Although I'm not a literalist, it's one of the great, powerful, mysterious objects that has come down through history. One of the narratives that is extremely beautiful and efficient and powerful is the narrative of David and Absalom in 2 Samuel. And I think that that had a lot of influence on my thinking in this book, Absalom, of course, being the son of King David, who betrays him. There's an indubitable emotional power in many of the narratives in the Bible that return one to extremely basic emotions. Many of the older hymns are very beautiful. Isaac Watts, of course, is a hymn writer in the tradition of Congregationalism. He was very much influenced by Isaac Newton, for example, and there are planets and meteors and so on showing up in his hymns very, very often. But again, the scale for him of his religious imagination corresponds to a very generously scaled scientific imagination. And it makes his hymns continue to have a spaciousness and resonance. It locates for me the religious imagination in a very beautiful way. My favorite theologian of the relatively recent period is Karl Barth, who died in the late 50s, but who was a very honorable figure relative to the rise of Hitler. He and Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who is another great theologian. They're both very serious people, and I have a feeling that there's been a pressure away from seriousness in much modern thought, as if we could sort of scale reality down to a size that we were more comfortable dealing with. The loss of seriousness seems to me to be, in effect, a loss of hope. I'm really disturbed by the degree to which I don't hear people saying, are we leaving the world better than we found it? I think we're a generation that perhaps could not answer in the affirmative, and that it is the evasion of the larger responsibility of being only one generation in what one hopes will be an infinite series of fruitful generations. There's a selfishness in refusing to understand that we're passing through. Others will come, and they deserve certain courtesies and certain considerations from us. To me, it seems rather Christ-like to be as unadorned as this place is, as little regarded. I can't help imagining that you will leave sooner or later, and it's fine if you've done that or if you mean to do it. This whole town does look like whatever hope becomes when it begins to weary a little, then weary a little more. But hope deferred is still hope. I love this town. I think sometimes of going into the ground here as a last wild gesture of love. I too will smolder away the time until the great and general incandescence. I'll pray that you grow up a brave man in a brave country. I will pray you find a way to be useful. I'll pray and then I'll sleep.